Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
I had quite a few people send me a story out of Canada because it reminded them of a story I've told on my channel here. And David, Doug, and Warp Factor, I don't think that's his legal name, but I could be wrong, all sent me a CBC News story about after her toaster oven caught fire, Ontario woman was told by Whirlpool to take it up with a company in China. Rosa Marchitelli wrote the story and said that Valerie Hammond's countertop oven burst into flames, causing hundreds of dollars in damage to her kitchen. So she contacted KitchenAid Appliance, which is owned by Whirlpool, and they replaced the oven because they said, well, it's covered by warranty. Now, here's the thing. Many warranties say specifically that they do not cover incidental or consequential damages. And consequential damages are those that happen because the warranty is breached in some way, and it causes other damage beyond damage to the thing itself. So all cars, for instance, have that kind of warning on there. Whether it's enforceable or not depends on the state you're in and so on. And so the toaster oven failing means that they've got to either repair or replace it under warranty. But the damage to the house may or may not be consequential damages, which may or may not have been disclaimed by the warranty. But the interesting thing is that argument does not come up in this story. So the question becomes, who's responsible for the consequential damages to the woman's house? Again, this is Canada, so they don't follow the Uniform Commercial Code, but they do most likely follow the common law with respect to warranties. And so it's an interesting case. Things got complicated when she asked for $600 to cover the smoke and fire damage, and Whirlpool refused, telling her she'd have to go after the company located in China that owns the factory that manufactured the appliance. I was absolutely shocked. I said, I don't understand. It's a KitchenAid. You're telling me you can wash your hands of it? And she's from Kitchener, Ontario. Hammond's problem started in October 2018 when her compact oven went up in flames while she was cooking a roast. I went upstairs to the linen cupboard to get a couple of tea towels and smelled what wasn't meat. It smelled like metal. This, my friends, is a woman of skill and talent because she can identify the smell of burning metal. Seconds later, smoke alarms went off and I came running downstairs. Kitchen was full of thick, dense smoke and flames were shooting out of the control panel of the oven. That is not a good sign when flames are shooting out of the control panel of your oven. The 68-year-old called and emailed Whirlpool dozens of times over the more than 6 months, but got nowhere on her claim for the damage. Her oven was not a Whirlpool product, a company rep told her via email, so they're not liable. She was referred to Electech International, which is apparently the company that built these things in China. Hammond says she was trying to contact the company in China using the phone number the Whirlpool gave her, calling China. Her calls would ring through, but no one would ever pick up. Her emails also went unanswered. She said, I was so frustrated with Whirlpool and didn't know what else to do. This was David and Goliath because they weren't going to listen to me. She says she won't use the replacement oven after the company wouldn't tell her what caused the fire. So they did send her a new oven, but she's like, I'm not going to use that because I don't know what caused the last one to burst into flames. Basically, it's a paperweight, she said. Meanwhile, the oven has not been recalled. So after hearing from Go Public, which is apparently who this woman complained to, Whirlpool apologized, calling Hammond's experience unacceptable and saying it would be appropriately addressed. They did eventually pay Hammond $5,000 for the damage and her trouble. But consumer advocates say that a lot of Canadians are having similar problems left on their own to deal with sometimes uncooperative companies when something goes wrong after finding government agencies set up to protect consumers are often difficult to access or ineffective. And welcome to the real world, I guess, because that's true in America also. The federal government does almost nothing for individual actions like that. State government, likewise. And I know the Attorney General's office in Michigan, for instance, has a consumer protection division. At least they used to. And I knew people who work there. I've been there many, many times. They had a wall of filing cabinets. And the filing cabinets basically was the department. So if you filed a complaint against a merchant, they would take your complaint and they'd open up a file and stick it in the file. They would then send a letter to the merchant and say, hey, someone complained about you. And as long as the merchant wrote back, they would take that, stick that in the file, and they send you a letter and say, well, you say X, they say Y, we don't know what to do with it, we wash our hands of it, and they close the file. And the filing cabinets were filled with closed files. And I know that because I saw them. And now, if something happened repeatedly against the same person or there was deeper criminal implications, sometimes they'd refer that out to the criminal division of the AG's office and something might happen. But, you know, a car dealership with a mechanic is ripping people off, or a transmission shop where they're ripping people off. Almost always those things are just, we got one here, we got one here, close it. But the interesting thing is, I did a story a while back about dumb arguments made by attorneys I've faced in court. And I actually had somebody from one of the manufacturers stand up in front of a court and say, we here at Ford Motor Company, I'm not sure if I mentioned before it was Ford, we here at Ford Motor Company don't actually manufacture vehicles under the Lemon Law. We merely assemble the parts, because almost all of the parts that are put into a modern car, a lot of them come from vendors. And so, you know, we might get the dashboard from one company and something else from Lear and something else from Johnson Controls and something else from here and something else from there. So all we are is an assembler of parts. We're not a manufacturer. And the judge looked at me and said, Mr. Leto, how do you answer that? And I said, well, you know, we can look at the definition of what a manufacturer is under the Lemon Law. And the law says specifically that manufacturers, somebody who manufactures cars and or assembles the parts, specifically includes the assembler of parts. Huh? And, you know, that argument didn't go very far. And that's the one and only time I ever heard that argument made. And also that attorney, I never saw her again, so I'm not really sure what happened to her or her firm or why they no longer have the account. I just know they no longer have the Ford account. But that was an argument that they made, and it was a nonsensical argument. But likewise, if Whirlpool is the parent company, and when you buy it, it comes in a box, says Whirlpool on it, or Frigidaire or whatever the sub company was, that's who you go to for your KitchenAid. I'm sorry. So Whirlpool owns KitchenAid, and you buy a KitchenAid product. It comes with a KitchenAid warranty. You complain to KitchenAid. You don't have to go complain to the company that built it for Whirlpool over in China. That's like saying you need to go find the workers. You need to actually go find the guys who are on the assembly line that day. Talk to each and every one of them. Find out which one of them didn't do his job that day and sue him. That's the height of absurdity, as I would like to say. But the good news is they eventually did give her some money, and she was so happy with the outcome when she got the $5,000 that she actually donated $1,000 of it to the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. So she sounds like a very good person. And don't think I was making fun of her when I said that she could smell the smell of metal burning or identify it. It's just kind of funny. I never heard it described that way. But, you know, like I said, it's an interesting argument. And several people said, Steve, that reminds me of the assembling argument from the Ford case. Yeah, reminds me of it too. It's absurd. So there you go. Questions, comments, put them below. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Before computers, compress was something you did to garbage, not something you did to a file.